This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Peter Sprigg with us. Peter is Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at the Family Research Council, or FRC, in Washington, D.C. His research and writing focuses on the issues of marriage and family, as well as human sexuality and religion in public life. Peter is the author of the book Outrage: How Gay Activists and Liberal Judges Are Trashing Democracy to Redefine Marriage. Peter is with us today on the show to discuss a recent ruling by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit that upheld as constitutional the marriage laws of four states within its jurisdiction. We'll be talking with Peter about the Sixth Circuit ruling and what it means with respect to the national battle over marriage. Peter, thanks so much for joining us again on Family Policy Matters.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. Now, pro-family advocates are celebrating the November 6th ruling by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals that upheld the marriage laws of four states. Tell us generally about this opinion and to which states it applies.
Well, this was a very significant opinion because, as your listeners may know, there have been a raft of court decisions from federal judges across the country since the 2013 decision of the Supreme Court striking down part of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, and these decisions relying on that as precedent to strike down state definitions of marriage as the union of a man and a woman. Now, several of these have already been appealed to the circuit court level, and all of the circuit courts had also struck down the state definitions of marriage until this ruling from the Sixth Circuit, in which they upheld the definitions of marriage in Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
Well, that is great news, and we were very excited that this opinion was put forth by the court. Now, the Sixth Circuit is the first federal appeals court in about a year, as you mentioned, to rule in favor of marriage as the union of one man and one woman. And I know that you said that you think this is significant. How significant do you think this is, and do you expect that this case will make its way to the Supreme Court?
Yes, that's the most significant part about it, in addition to the quality of the decision itself, which I think was very valuable. But everyone was surprised. Most observers, I think, on both sides of the debate over marriage were surprised in October when the U.S. Supreme Court simply declined to hear any of the appeals from the other cases, the other circuits that had already reached them. They did not issue a ruling one way or another. They just said, we're not going to hear these cases. And when that happens, then the circuit court ruling takes effect, which has led to marriage licenses being issued to same-sex couples in a number of states across the country. But there was some sense that they might be reluctant to take up the issue and didn't feel a need to take up the issue as long as the lower courts were all basically moving in the same direction. Now, I criticized that decision on the part of the Supreme Court as cowardly, because they're basically passing the buck downwards and allowing the lower courts to do their dirty work for them. Obviously, this is an important constitutional issue. We should hear from the Supreme Court on it. But now they have a conflict, and this is sort of considered the classic golden ticket to the Supreme Court. If there's a question about whether your issue will come before the Supreme Court, the most likely way of ensuring that it will is to have two or more circuits around the country that are divided in the answer they give to the core constitutional question. And that's what we have now. With the Sixth Circuit ruling this month, we now have a classic circuit split. Courts in different parts of the country saying that the Constitution of the United States requires completely different things. And the only way to resolve that is through a decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. So we certainly think this makes that much more likely. Of course, as I said, the caution, Nobody knows what the court is going to do, and so I can't say that with 100% certainty, but I think most observers agree that it greatly increases the likelihood we will see a Supreme Court decision on this issue.
Well, we were certainly dismayed here in North Carolina when the Supreme Court failed to take up those cases, especially the Bostic case out of Virginia, which was an opinion handed down by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, and North Carolina falls under the jurisdiction of the Fourth Circuit. And so that opinion has gone into effect, as you mentioned, and marriage licenses have been issued to same-sex couples in North Carolina. So we are absolutely one of the states that have been significantly impacted by the Supreme Court's failure to take up those cases. Now, Peter, let's talk more specifically about the Sixth Circuit's opinion. What did the majority say about the state marriage laws and why they are constitutional in a different response than what we've seen from other federal appeals courts?
Well, there are a number of ways in which the argument for a constitutional right to same-sex marriage has been pressed. And one of the things actually they pointed out was that the lower courts, even though there have been these many lower court decisions in favor of same-sex marriage, they've not been unanimous. Even those courts have not been unanimous in the reasoning behind it. Basically, there are two portions of the 14th Amendment to which the which was adopted after the Civil War, to which the advocates of same-sex marriage have appealed. One is the Due Process Clause, and one is the Equal Protection Clause. Now, courts have ruled that the Due Process Clause provides not only procedural protections, but substantive protections of certain liberties, even if they're not actually enumerated in the Constitution. And one of those rights that has been recognized as fundamental rights, and there have been prior Supreme Court decisions which have talked about a fundamental right to marry, and which have struck down certain restrictions on the ability of certain people to marry. The best known is that they struck down the bans on interracial marriage. They also had Supreme Court decisions, though, which struck down a state law that prevented primarily men without outstanding child support obligations from remarrying or marrying, and that was struck down, and one that actually prevented incarcerated prisoners from marrying, and even that was struck down by the Supreme Court, all under this fundamental right to marry. Well, the advocates of same-sex marriage are claiming that the fundamental right to marry includes the right to marry the person of your choice, even if that person is of the same sex. Now, all of those cases involved opposite-sex couples, so the Supreme Court has actually not spoken to that. But what the Supreme Court has done, and what the Sixth Circuit recognized, is in a case back in 1997, the Supreme Court said no, that there was no such right, and that when they are looking at identifying new fundamental rights under the Due Process Clause, there were certain criteria. First of all, the right had to be clearly and narrowly defined, and it had to be one that was objectively, deeply rooted in the country's history and traditions. Okay, so in this case, the clear definition of the right that is being sought is the right to marry a person of the same sex. And that is obviously not something that is deeply rooted in the history and traditions of our country. So as the Sixth Circuit correctly pointed out, that was not a route which would supply a right to same-sex marriage. And they denied the argument in other courts that, well, this fundamental right to marry is implicit within that is the right to marry anyone you want. Of course, the advocates of same-sex marriage don't want to deal with the implications of that because there are other restrictions on the ability to marry the person of your choice. No one is allowed to marry a child. No one's allowed to marry a close blood relative. No one's allowed to marry a person who's already married. And all of those restrictions would be in jeopardy if we declared an absolute right to marry the person of your choice. So that's one big area, the Due Process Clause and the fundamental rights argument. The second area is equal protection. The 14th Amendment says states must give to all their citizens the equal protection of the laws. Well, that doesn't mean that everybody has to be treated equally in everything, because that wouldn't be possible. But it does mean that people who are similarly situated have to be treated equally, because all laws will make classifications of one type or another. They'll make a distinction between one group that gets a particular benefit and another group that doesn't get that benefit. Now, one argument that I've made is the advocates of same-sex marriage argue that laws defining marriage as the union of a man and a woman classify on the basis of sexual orientation. I've actually argued that that's not even true, because marriage license applications do not ask you your sexual orientation. And homosexual people are as free to marry as heterosexual people are, but they have to abide by the same rules as anybody else, which is they have to marry a person of the opposite sex. Now, I know that sounds absurd to people, but that's on the face of it, that's true. But even if you accept that these laws classify on the basis of sexual orientation, then there are different sort of standards of review under equal protection law, what's called strict scrutiny, which is for certain categories that are generally those that are explicitly mentioned in the Constitution, like race. It's very difficult for a state to justify a law which classifies people on the basis of race. Then there's rational basis review. That's the most lenient, which says the state only has to have any conceivable rational basis for this classification, and it will be upheld. And then there's an intermediate one called heightened scrutiny, which applies to sex and a couple of other categories, which requires a little bit higher bar for the states to meet, but not as high as the strict scrutiny. So there's no precedent which has ever said that sexual orientation classifications should be subjected to heightened scrutiny or strict scrutiny. But some of these lower courts have said that they should. They've said that, it's implied in the Windsor decision, the DOMA decision last year, and so forth. Well, the Sixth Circuit said, there's no precedent for this, no precedent from the Supreme Court, and explicit precedent against it within the Sixth Circuit, because each circuit is bound by its own precedent, even in cases where the Supreme Court has not ruled on an issue. And so they, analyzing under the rational basis test, they said the fact that opposite sex couples are capable of natural procreation and same sex couples are not was in itself reason enough to provide it provided enough of a rational basis to uphold these laws. And they also said that it was reasonable for the states to want to function as laboratories of democracy in terms of allowing the democratic process to respond to the experiment of same-sex marriage, if you will, in other states, and decide whether they want to follow that example or not. So one of the key arguments within the case, besides these specific issues, was the question of who should decide in our governmental system an issue like this. And they came down firmly on the side of saying this is an issue that the people should decide through the democratic process.
Unfortunately, Peter, we're out of time for this week. Peter, I know that FRC has provided a lot of resources about this. Where can our listeners go to get more information about the Family Research Council and the resources that you have available about marriage and a whole host of other issues?
Well, the easiest place to go is to our website, www.frc.org, FRC for Family Research Council. And, yeah, you'll find an abundance of resources there from short talking points to more detailed booklets and pamphlets and so forth addressing this issue, as well as our legal briefs that we have filed, friend of the court briefs that we've filed in some of these cases, making more detailed legal arguments as well.
Well, thank you for that, and I would encourage our listeners to avail themselves of that information so that they are better equipped when they engage in conversations about marriage and these other critically important issues that we're facing daily in our culture. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters, for all your great work defending family values and marriage at the Family Research Council, and just for your commitment to speaking the truth in love.
Thank you very much.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-919-919. 800-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.